Shortly before dusk, Brigid hurried through the drizzle to Grant and Domi's hut. There, Domi tended the small fire, throwing lumps of dried peat on the little flames. Aromatic, sweetish smoke curled up from it.
Where's Grant?
Here.
He stood on the far side of the hut, staring at the rain and the forest with distant eyes. He didn't turn around.
I guess you want to check over the interphaser?
Yes.
He pointed to a corner distractedly. Brigid saw the gleam of the metal case resting on a heap of furs. She brought it close to the fire, undid the latches, and raised the lid.
Have you tested the system since you arrived?
No, I've been a little busy.
Normally, Grant was somewhat short on words, so Brigid didn't immediately pick up on the undercurrent of worry in his voice.
Seems fine.
Wonderful.
Are you worried about Kane?
Only if he's alive.
Morrigan seemed pretty certain he is.
Grant finally turned around to face her. The flickering flames cast his features into strange, reddish shadows.
And that might not be good.
With all that's happened to him since we escaped Cobaltville, do you think he's still stable?
Do you mean, do I think he's so fused out he could be put under the spell of this fairy queen, this Fand?
Yes.
He considered the question for a moment, then shook his head in frustration.
Even with all that's happened to him, happened to all of us, he's still the Kane I've always known.
That's really the pertinent point, at least at a psychological tangent. He may no longer be the Kane we know.
Kane tossed the green mantle to the naked woman with his left hand. His right hand was full of his Sin Eater.
Cover yourself up, sweetheart. The Danann didn't build this place with central heating.
Fand snatched the garment out of the air. Her full breasts rose and fell with emotion. Pure, homicidal fury seethed in her eyes. Her silence spoke volumes. Kane smiled without humor.
Speak English, and speak quietly. If your fairy harpist minces in, I don't want to have to chill her.
How dare you use me like that? Humiliate me in such a fashion.
How dare you? You invade my mind, play with my feelings, screw around with my perceptions. What gives you the right?
I sought only to awaken the spirit of Cuculain, who I know slumbers within you. Our souls touched in that borderland between worlds. If only you could remember, really remember our love like I do.
Enough. Give it a rest. I know a little something about psionics. You didn't awaken the spirit of Cuculain. You imposed illusions on my mind, no different from that fog Gius. It's no more than one mind creating impressions on another mind.
No! The memories I awakened in you were real!
Even if that's true, so the fuck what? They're in the past. And why are you so positive your memories are genuine and not just old legends you want to make real?
She gestured to the stone chamber around them.
The memories here, of this land, of its past, speak to me, sing in my soul. Can't you feel them? I know all the histories of the mighty Danann race, of their kings, queens, heroes. Their loves, their passions, their tragedies. They live through me. They live on in me.
Memories are all they are, Fand. You live in the here and now. You're not a fairy queen. You're a hybrid, a genetic mixture of three races.
Fand glared at him sullenly, lower lip trembling. By degrees, the wild heat in her eyes guttered out, taking on an eerie, remote expression. Kane kept his eyes on hers, shivering slightly. He still felt her power, the swirling, magnetic whirlpool of her unbridled emotions.
Yes. My mother told me the same thing when I was very young. I didn't want to believe her, but I knew she spoke the truth. It became harder and harder to bear as I grew older. My attendants at the Priory still treated me as if I were indeed a fairy princess.
Kane lowered the Sin Eater and squatted down near her, just out of reach of her long arms and her long, very sharp fingernails.
And so you retreated into fantasy, backing into it one step at a time, further away from reality with every year you lived.
What would you have done? Born with empathy for this land? Ira may be far older than any civilization on Earth, the most ancient and occult of worlds. I am a bridge between all that lost knowledge and the world of today. I breathe the dust of the vanished and make them live again.
But I'm not a bridge, Fand. I'm myself. I have my own life, my own history, memories of my own. If I ever was this Kukulin, it's so long ago it doesn't matter anymore. My spirit has moved on, progressed, as should yours.
She shook her head violently, yellow tresses flying, the gold balls in them clinking and tinkling.
That I cannot do. I was bred as the guardian of Iris' spirit. If I relinquish that role, then my life means nothing, and Ira itself will fall neath the heel of an oppressor.
You mean Strongbow?
Fury boiled up, white hot in her eyes. She spoke between clenched teeth.
Aye, Strongbow. He was the reason I desired you so, Cain. With your warrior's heart to augment my own, we could have destroyed him, avenged his crimes against my mother and all Celts.
Cain. There's no denying he's a sick son of a bitch, and he has designs on Ireland, but...
Don't you understand? He has designs on me! I know his depraved secrets, his diseased lusts. He could not have my mother, so now he craves power over me. If he cannot rule me, he will kill me. He wants to defile me with his abominable seed!
The sheer undiluted horror at the possibility vibrating in her voice shook Cain, triggering a feeling of repulsion in him as well.
What do you mean, you know his secrets?
Fand clapped her hands to her head, nails digging into her scalp. Her upper body began rocking back and forth. Despite his warning for her to speak quietly, a keening wail of self-loathing burst from her lips, from the roots of her soul.
Oh, he's in me! I hear his thoughts, vile, depraved, unclean. We are bound, we are joined. Day after day, night after night, I feel his mind nibbling away at mine. Groping, probing, slithering.
Over the sound, Cain heard a swift scuffle of feet from the passageway opening. In a rush, he came to his feet, leveling his sin-eater. Aoife appeared, hand poised over the strings of her harp. Her eyes flicked uncertainly from the blaster to the hysterically weeping Fand.
Drop it!
Aoife hesitated. Then her fingers reached out for the strings. He squeezed the trigger, the concussion rebounding and ringing from the rock walls and ceiling. The 9mm round crashed into the brass frame of the harp, jolting it from her arms with a bone-numbing, bruising shock. She cried out as the instrument bounced, twanging discordantly over the stone floor of the passage. Fand lowered her hands from her tear-stained face. She didn't much resemble a fairy princess now, or guardian of much of anything, even her own soul. Tears flowed from her eyes, dripping from her pointed chin, staining the bodice of her mantle. Her hair hung in disarray, and threads of blood from self-inflicted scratches inched their way over her high, pale forehead. She clutched frantically at Cain, plucking first at his leg, then snatching his left hand. She clung to it with a painful strength.
Help me, dear Lynn.
Cain looked down at her and suddenly felt as old as the stones around him. He thought of Cobaltville and Salvo and the Baron. He thought of Baptiste and Grant and Domi and the Redoubt and all the desperate people cowering inside of it, waiting fearfully for what the Archon Directorate might do to them, to the rest of humanity.
I will.
Reaching down, Cain urged the woman to her feet. He held her for a long while, cradling the back of her head against his shoulder. He stroked her hair, remembering with an ironic smile how he had tried to soothe Baptiste similarly after rescuing her from execution.
Let's get out of here.
By the hand, he led her into the dim passageway, past a staring and dumbfounded Aoife. When they were out in the sunlight again, they sat down side by side on the massive stone before the entrance. He gazed out toward the belt of the forest and saw, without much surprise, that it looked like another copse of trees he had seen. He saw no sign of winged fairies or unicorns.
Cain.
Surprised and gratified she had pronounced his name correctly, he couldn't help but chuckle.
Yes?
Could you love me? Even if you're not Kukulin?
Cain's quick, evasive retort stuck in his throat. He seriously contemplated the question, but it was difficult to do so, with the heat of the beautiful elfin woman warming him. He raised his eyes toward the sun, hanging high in the clear blue sky. Aoife had sung something about a savage sun, but it didn't look savage now. It glowed with a friendly, golden fire, reaching down to thaw the ice in his heart. Turning slightly, he cupped Fan's cheek in his hand and looked into her unsettlingly gorgeous eyes, half-hooded now by her heavy lids and sweeping lashes. He kissed her lips gently. Her arms came up and tightened around his shoulders. Their kiss continued. There were six of them, all mounted on horses. When Cain saw the sunset glints in Bridget's hair, he pulled away from Fand and sprang to his feet, hoping he didn't look as guilty as he felt. His overriding emotion was relief, so powerful that his knees went watery and weak. Although he was happy to see that Grant, Domi, and Morrigan were with her, his eyes were irresistibly drawn to the man and the woman riding out in front. He was a brawny, red-bearded man, like an illustration from an old history text come to life. He carried a round, brass-embossed shield on his left arm, and a long war spear was gripped in his right hand. The woman was at least as unusual, with hair cut severely short except for a curving forelock. Her high-planed face bore dark blue spiral designs. The body under her green tunic was long and clean-cut. She looked oddly familiar.
Mother.
The riders reined up in a semicircle in front of the great stone. All of them stared at him with an annoying mixture of anxiety and suspicion.
Well, slowly but surely, about time you got here.
Grant swung out of the saddle and stalked over to him. His dark face was tightly set, his brows lowered.
You stupid bastard! What did you think you were doing, jumping into the drink like that?
Cain began a sarcastic retort, but the genuine anger in his partner's voice caused it to wilt on his tongue.
It seemed like a good idea at the time.
I was in no danger.
Now you tell me. What's your excuse, Baptiste?
I was pulled overboard.
She said no more, busying herself untying the interfacer case from the rear of the saddle. The bearded man's eyes sparkled as if he were enjoying a private joke.
So you're the mighty Cain, eh?
As I keep telling everybody, the name is Cain. Who might you be?
Them that bother to speak of me call me Finn, of the clan MacTrunmer.
Cain looked over at the tall woman. She had yet to dismount, sitting rigidly in the saddle, gripping the leather rein so tightly her knuckles stood out like ivory knobs. She stared past him at Fand. The resemblance between the two was startling, yet they looked more like sisters. Then, bringing one leg up over the horse's head, she dropped lightly to the ground and approached Fand. Cain self-consciously got out of her way. Besides, her intense blue stare made him distinctly uncomfortable. She went to Fand and looked deeply, steadily into her face, as if trying to fathom a mystery. Bright blue eyes met molten gold. Then, carefully, tentatively, as if she feared Fand was made of spun glass, she touched the side of her daughter's face.
Her mother?
Yeah, Mother Fand, they call her. Quite the woman. You all right?
I was thrown a few curves.
No pun intended.
He regarded her stonily, but she met his stare without blinking.
That's right, Baptiste. No pun intended. Maybe you can bring me up to date. I lost a day somewhere.
I'll bet.
Cain scowled, opening his mouth to say something insulting. Bridget cut him off by relating how she had been taken to the citadel of the Priory of Eowyn and what she had learned there. Then it was Grant's turn to tell how he and Domi had fallen in with Finn's clan.
Your turn now, Cain.
Not much to tell. Damn near drowned. Then I didn't. I made it to shore and damn near died of exposure. Then I didn't. Woke up this morning with her standing over me. She brought me here.
Why do I have the feeling you're leaving out a few details?
Cain looked over toward Mother Fand and her daughter. They sat on the big stone, heads together, clinging to each other. The mother appeared to be doing most of the talking. Morrigan and Finn stood apart, giving the two women as much privacy as they could in such open surroundings.
All right. If it's details you want, details you shall have.
Quickly, thoroughly, he told them everything that had befallen him since awakening at the Standing Stone, including his brief vision of Fand during the Gateway Transit.
You didn't think that was worth mentioning?
No, I didn't. How was I to know it wasn't just a jump dream?
Bridget gave him a searching, penetrating stare. When he caught her eye, she looked away.
Fand was reenacting the legend of how her Danann namesake met Kukulin, right down to striking you with a staff.
Yeah, and it delivered quite a wallop, too. Then there's that business with the harp.
In Celtic lore, magic is based on music, but it means more than song. Utilizing sound waves and the proper frequency and harmonics, heavy objects can be moved. That's one theory how the megalith sites were built. Remember the infrasound weapons?
Those I'm not likely to forget.
As for the staff giving you a shock, she probably uses it to channel and focus her bioelectric energy, the basis of the magic wand themes throughout mythology.
Okay, she brought you here, you hallucinated, and then you had a long chat with her. That's it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much?
That's all. Is it my imagination, or are you two suspicious of something or other?
If Fand is linked to Strongbow, as she herself admitted to you, we've got to be sure you're not psi-linked to her before we try to engage the interface point.
I'm not. You'll have to trust me. Look, let's turn on the goddamn thing and get this over with.
Has anyone figured out how we get home from here?
There was a long, uncomfortable moment of silence.
A good point. I doubt Strongbow will allow us the use of his gateway at Wildroot.
I agree. However, it's remotely possible that if we open a vortex, we can uplink with the Cerberus autosequence initiator.
You don't sound very sure of any of that.
That's because I'm not.
Morrigan chose that moment to cautiously and apologetically interrupt the reunion between mother and daughter. She spoke to them briefly, then called the others over. Mother Fand regarded Kane with troubled eyes, but nodded courteously when he introduced himself.
You know why we're here?
Mother Fand slid a protective arm around her daughter's shoulders.
Aye. What you intend could either help or irreparably harm my girl.
Or do nothing at all.
'Tis still a risk, and a grave one.
Life is a gamble, innit? From the first step you take to the last, nothing is certain but the final outcome.
Silence hung among the eight people. Kane felt Fan's golden gaze upon him, and he steadfastly refused to meet it. It occurred to him that between the two of them, his was by far the more sterile life. He took plenty of chances, of risks, but it all had to do with the simple business of survival, of running the race. He existed. He didn't truly live. Fand swam through primal forces, tapped into energies and emotions that verified, even justified, every microsecond of her life. Maybe she was mad, deranged, walking around in a constant state of dementia, but her passions stemmed from a raging life force, as unpredictable yet as natural as a summer storm.
Mother explained it to me. I confess I don't truly understand what you hope to accomplish, but you have my leave to make the attempt.
Out of the corner of his eye, Kane noted Bridget bristling at the ingenuous arrogance in her tone, but wisely she didn't respond to it. All of them trooped into the passageway. Aoife stood in the central chamber, disconsolately cradling the harp as she would an injured pet. Bridget looked around in wide-eyed wonder, murmuring to herself over the glyphs and rock carvings. She carried the case to the center of the chamber and laid it down on the floor, removing the metal pyramidion and its support systems. Fand eyed the deceptively simple device curiously. As Bridget set the interfacer up, everyone took positions close to the opposite wall, near the passage door. She crouched over the keyboard, finger hovering over the power tab. It stayed there.
Well?
Something new just struck me. When we activated the interfacer in Strongbow's place, the proximity of the Danann relics was enough to open a small rift, just large enough for a manifestation of Fan's mind energy.
I remember. To me, it was like a dream.
Regardless, she has a natural affinity for the quantum field at these vortex points. What if her presence here interferes with its operation?
What if it does? Well, we have that spatial discontinuity Morrigan told us about.
That seems a little extreme, but you can't be sure of anything when you're playing with the quantum field.
If things get out of hand, just shut it off. Pull the plug.
It's a bit more complicated than that, but it's a sound enough strategy. Okay, here goes.
She depressed the power button, and her fingers quickly and deftly tapped in the memorized numerical sequence. She rose from the device and backed away. The gleaming Pyramidian squatted in the center of the floor and did nothing. Everyone watched it in breathless silence. A faint resonance, a non-sound, a thready pulse of vibration suddenly tickled everyone's skins. Shadows crawled over the walls, moving in fitful jerks and leaps.
Something's happening.
Yeah, but what?
A bluish, waxy light curled up from the apex of the interfacer, twisting like a finger of tepid ectoplasm. It stretched upward a foot, then 2 feet. A yellow nova erupted from the tip of the Pyramidian. The shockwave rocked them, slapped their breaths painfully back into their lungs, tumbled everyone off their feet. Their eyes stung fiercely, rods and cones overstressed. Kane's vision entered first. Through the blurred afterimage of the flare, he saw a swirling column of light, corkscrewing like the spiral patterns cut into the rock walls. It condensed, curving like a gigantic candle's flame exposed to the direct blast of a strong breeze. It touched the largest of the spiral glyphs on the far wall and formed a funnel shape around it, a circle of spinning fire hanging against the gloom. Through it, he saw a bizarre vista of ribbons of circuitry, of distorted men in red jackets and berets. It was like looking through several hundred feet of cloudy water, body parts magnified and others weirdly diminished. The image strobed, variegated hues of color shifting over it. Fan's eyes rolled, and she gasped desperately for breath. A dark, thin trickle of blood issued sluggishly from her left nostril. Veins throbbed and swelled at the sides of her head.
Pull the goddamn plug!
The echoes of his cry still rang when the first dragoon came bounding out of the funnel of light. The dragoon lurched to an unsteady halt, his treaded boot soles catching on the rough rock floor. His head swiveled to and fro, the barrel of the MP5 SD3 swinging in tandem with it. The subgun stuttered, and a short tongue of flame licked from the bore. Kane rolled as a stream of bullets raked the stone wall overhead, showering him with dust and shards. The dragoon, still somewhat disoriented, didn't have a particular target in mind. He simply shot at the first people he saw. Sin-eaters sprang into Kane's and Grant's hands simultaneously. All 6 slugs stitched the dragoon's head and shoulders, slamming him down and catapulting him through a clumsy half-somersault amid a scattering of blood and tissue. He wound up lying on his stomach, with his subgun pinned beneath him. Everyone stood, Kane shifting his attention from the pulsing funnel sprouting from the interfacer to the people in the chamber. Apha lay crumpled in a half-prone position at the doorway of the passage. He saw no rise and fall of respiration beneath the wet bodice of her red mantle. Finn leaned against the wall, grimacing, blood from a bullet-ripped gouge in his right biceps painting his arm crimson. By the way his arm dangled, the bone was obviously broken. The spear lay at his feet. Grant put his blaster on the Pyramidian, then on the coruscating swirl of light.
What the fuck is going on? Where'd that bastard come from?
Some kind of quantum conduit between New London and here. Strongbow must have built a relay system which automatically uplinked with the interfacer when it activated a vortex.
Oh.
He knew about Project Cerberus, remember? About the totality concept. He had a project of his own prepared long before we came along. One designed to interface with the energies here in Ireland. We opened the invasion route he's been seeking!
Turn it off before we're ass deep in his snake-eyed soldiers!
Brigid rushed to do it. Kane wondered why no other dragoon had made the leap from New London, then reasoned that the first one had been a scout, and Strongbow was probably waiting for him to return with a report. Brigid kneeled before the interfacer, fingers frantically clattering over the keyboard. The glowing funnel didn't change in appearance. With a curse, she yanked the coaxial power cable from it. Still, nothing happened.
We can't disengage!
Fand is controlling the vortex energy now. Or it's controlling her. She's keeping the conduit open!
Kane whirled, looking with horror at Fand, wreathed tightly in her mother's arms. Her eyes rolled up in her head. Violent convulsions shook her slender body, her heels drumming on the stone floor, froth bubbling from her lips.
If we can't break the link, she'll be the conduit for Strongbow's invasion.
The only way to break the link is to kill her. That I will not allow. Not before I die myself.
Kane swung back toward the opening, squinting into it. The view was partially obscured by waves of lambent, multicolored fire.
I'll break the link on Strongbow's side.
He's probably got a fucking army over there. Who do you think you are? This Cthulhu stoop?
It's Cthulhu. No, I don't think I'm anybody but me, who makes a habit of playing the 1%.
Not alone, you haven't. We'll all go with you!
She bent over the dead Dragoon, wrestled him onto his back, and pulled the MP5 SD3 from underneath his body. She hefted the 9-pound weapon, made sure a round was chambered, and adjusted the firing rate selector switch. She turned to Morrigan, Mother Fan, and Finn.
After the last one of us have gone in, and if the conduit stays open longer than you think it should, you've got only one chance to break the link. One of you will have to throw the interfacer into the rift.
What will that do?
Maybe nothing at all. But if my guess is even close to being right, the quantum pocket we have here will be turned inside out. If there's a violent reaction, it will be confined to New London, Strongbow side of it. What will happen to you? We'll let you know when we find out, if we can.
Kane stepped carefully into the swirling funnel. It was now the color of blood. Bridget, Grant, and Domi lined up behind him.
Me first. Wait for a count of 20, then Grant, and so on.
He tensed his leg muscles, rising on the balls of his feet.
Cain, I want Carabatos. If you can, bring him to me. Not just for me, but for my daughter.
Revenge?
Why the damnation not?
Cain nodded, facing the blood-tinted whirlpool. He readied himself and sprang up and forward. His ears cracked, his vision smeared, his belly turned over sickeningly. There was no shock of impact, merely a strange cushioning sensation, as if he had jumped into a wall of compressed air. He was conscious of a half instant of whirling vertigo, as if he hurtled a vast distance at blinding speed. Then he staggered across a solid, slick floor, slamming headlong into a body and falling in a tangle of limbs, hearing a loud clatter of metal. He had collided with a Dragoon, knocking the man's legs out from under him and the air from his lungs. He had only a fraction of a second to get his bearings. He saw a cavernous ovoid chamber, crammed with catwalks, lifts, a webwork of circuitry and electronic consoles. Behind him floated a bubble of blackness. Jagged lines of energy streaked over its surface. Kane rolled away from the gasping soldier, seeing at least a dozen other Dragoons lined up in formation on the far side of a transparent armaglass enclosure.
Kill him! Kill him now!
Kane gained his feet just as a pattern of phosphorescence slid over the black bubble. The pattern molded and stretched itself into a human outline, and the outline suddenly became Grant, who nearly staggered into his arms.
Well, shit.
Then figures were running everywhere. Kane spotted Strongbow standing at the end of a catwalk on a small platform that projected out directly over the ebony orb. His hands played over an instrument panel, and he shouted hysterical, unintelligible commands. Kane couldn't understand a word he was saying. When a trio of Dragoons began unloading in their direction with subguns, he was able to figure it out. Both men lunged sideways, away from the opening in the armaglass wall. The doorway was narrow, allowing only one man at a time to fire into the perimeter. It was defensible, but not against blaster fire directed from the catwalks above. So far, it hadn't happened. Grant returned the fire with his Sin Eater and sent the Dragoons scuttling for cover. The man whom Kane had collided with dragged a Beretta from a hip holster, and one bullet from Kane dropped him where he crouched. The black sphere flashed and sparkled and disgorged Bridget. She stumbled, nearly tripping over the Dragoon's body, then quickly oriented herself. She bounded away from the rectangular opening in the transparent barrier just as a Dragoon unloaded his weapon. Leaning out and around, Kane shot him directly between the eyes, the shock of impact flinging the mirrored sunglasses from his face. He went down without a sound. The orb throbbed, and Domi came tumbling out of it. Grant snatched her by the collar and bodily lifted her out of the line of fire.
Don't hit the sphere! Don't you dare damage the sphere!
Kane understood him this time. As he hoped, he was screaming at his men not to shoot through the opening for fear of damaging the black sphere. He inspected the pulsing obsidian bubble, thinking it looked like the mouth of a black furnace, seething with the equally black fires of eternity.
You down there! Listen to me! I'm not your enemy! Come out of there and I promise you won't be harmed!
Carabatos!
Strongbow!
Carabatos, you're a congenital liar. You can even convince yourself that your lies are true. And maybe that's a valuable characteristic for a man who was in your line of work. But if you believe you can manipulate the quantum stream to your own ends, it's the biggest self-delusion of your life.
Strongbow leaned forward, hands curled around the top rail of the elevated platform. Panic flickered on his face, showed in his inhuman eyes.
You haven't the slightest conception of what I want!
Like hell we don't. Order out of chaos, law from anarchy, peace with honor and every other bit of self-serving dogma ever vomited up by fascists who didn't have the guts to admit they're fascists. After what you did to Fand and her daughter, you should have been fried twice over in the nuke storm, Karabatos.
Strongbow! My name is Strongbow!
Doesn't anybody have an idea who they really are around here? Just because you appropriated a name from history doesn't mean we're buying into your personal mythography. You're not a conqueror. You're a pathetic asshole, a failed bureaucrat, an impotent little paper pusher.
How dare you! Strongbow
began shrieking again, his voice so thick with mad emotion he was completely incomprehensible. In his fury, he hopped up and down, spittle spraying from his writhing lips. The dragoons stood immobile, seeming to be deaf and blind to the deranged ranting spilling from their lord's mouth. Kane tried to align him in his blaster sights, but the bottom of the platform spoiled his aim. Grant reached inside his coat.
Enough.
His hand came out gripping a frag grenade. His thumb flipped away the safety pin. He lobbed the Gren with an underhanded toss toward the dragoons, then ducked back behind the impenetrable cover of the armaglass. The soldiers broke formation and started to run, but only a few of them were quick enough to get out of range of the explosive charge and the effect radius of the shrapnel. The Gren bounced only once before detonating. A hellflower bloomed, petals of flame curving and spreading outward. Spewing from the end of every petal was a rain of shrapnel, ripping into bodies, walls, equipment. Fragments rattled against the armaglass barrier, ricocheting away. Grant lunged out of the opening through the haze of eye-stinging, throat-closing smoke. He stroked a short burst from his Sin-Eater, saw a wounded dragoon jerk, lurch, and fall. Kane followed him a half a heartbeat later, triggering his blaster, bullets pounding through a red uniform jacket he glimpsed through the smoke. The dragoon vaulted backward, blood spurting from three holes neatly grouped over his heart. The floor was awash with looping liquid ribbons of vermilion, adding to its already slick quality. Five dragoons sprawled across it, neat uniform jackets shredded, soaked with their vital fluids, the flesh beneath flayed to the bone. Hefting the MP5 SD3, Bridget slid around the doorway. She exchanged a quick, grim nod with Domi, who double-fisted her combat master. Then both women rushed out into the huge egg-shaped chamber. Five dragoons had regrouped, firing in the direction of Grant and Kane. Muzzles flashing with little twinkles of dancing flame. A couple of them bled profusely from shrapnel-inflicted wounds, but they were still in shape to fight. A single shot from Domi's blaster drilled a hole through the jaw of one of them, punching him backward with such force his head struck the floor first. A scarlet geyser erupted from his mouth and a severed carotid artery. Bridget framed the dragoon next to him in her sights and fired a burst that opened up his chest, propelling him backward in a crimson mist. The man was dead before he hit the floor. Grant staggered as the close-range bullet slammed into his coat with all the driving impact of a series of jackhammer blows. He nearly went down, feet sliding and seeking purchase on the polished floor. When he coughed, the contraction of his diaphragm muscles sparked a hot spasm of pain on the right side of his ribcage. It took an iron will to keep from clutching at his side and sinking to his knees. He knew at least one rib was cracked, possibly broken. Blinking back tears of pain from his eyes, he looked through the flat plains of smoke for Kane. He glimpsed him racing for the latticework of girders and posts supporting the elevated catwalk. Strongbow saw him too.
There! He's away from the orb! Now! Blast him!
Grant made a rapid head count and saw at least six, maybe as many as eight, dragoons on the catwalk above him. He raised his Sin-Eater and raked the walkway with a deadly stream of 9mm tumblers. Only one of his targets went down, clutching at his right shoulder. His companions fired staccato bursts in Grant's direction. They had him at a lethal disadvantage, holding the high ground and establishing a firing pattern. Grant backpedaled as fast as his legs and throbbing ribs would allow, as bullets whizzed near his head. He yanked another grenade from his combat harness, snapping away the pin at the same time. He had no particular destination in mind for it. All he cared about was creating sufficient noise and confusion to serve as a diversion. He whirled away, his Kevlar padded back to the blast. Kane felt the heavy jolt of the explosion, the sear of heat against the back of his neck. The autofire overhead stopped abruptly as the dragoons backed hastily away from the epicenter of the detonation, just in case it was another frag. He began climbing the framework one-handed, his right hand maintaining a firm grip on the Sin-Eater. His feet found a cross-braced girder and he sprang up from it, wrapping his hand around a steel stanchion. Swinging his legs up, he locked them around a support post. Using his knees, he shinned up as fast as he could. a fresh burst of fire erupted behind him. A second later, a dragoon pitched headfirst over the rail like an empty suit of clothes. Domi had successfully taken out the soldier, training his gun on Kane. Above her, a dragoon loomed out of the smoke. He pointed a Beretta directly at her head. She ducked and sidestepped before he squeezed the trigger, lashed out with a leg, and felt her foot slam solidly against his groin. The red-uniformed man barely reacted. He uttered a faint grunt and straight-armed her. His slamming palm caught her in the upper chest, driving almost all the wind from her lungs and sending her sprawling. She slid across the floor on her shoulders and back, but managed to squeeze off two quick shots between her outspread legs. The dragoon's tunic sprouted a pair of holes, and he was knocked off his feet. Dragging air back into her lungs, she climbed to her feet, seeing Brigid sprinting low beneath the drifting veil of smoke. Brigid ran for the catwalk supports, where she saw Kane straining to scale them. Before she covered much ground, three dragoons sprinted to intercept her. Brigid saw them coming, but she kept going, knowing a retreat back to the curving armaglass wall would only give them clear shots at her back while leaving her friends other adversaries to deal with. She altered direction, racing toward them, firing from the hip with the subgun. They returned fire, and she felt a bullet pluck at her hair. A dragoon's chest broke apart in flying arcs of blood. Another was thrown sideways in a clumsy, crazy pirouette, kneecaps dissolving in a fluid welter of crimson and white bone chips. Her weapon empty, Brigid flung it out in front of her. The metal frame smashed into the dragoon's face a microsecond before her knee smashed into his solar plexus. Carried by the momentum of her rush, she bowled into it. Both of them went down, sending a burst from his subgun up toward the high arched ceiling. Going into a shoulder roll, Brigid cartwheeled up and over the man, using his chest as a springboard. She landed on her feet in a deep squat, then sprang up and onto the dragoon. His face was spattered with blood from a laceration on his forehead. Her right foot, with all her weight behind it, drove into his neck. She pivoted sharply and smartly on her heel, crushing his larynx, grinding it into his windpipe. Clutching at his throat, a flood of scarlet spilling from his open mouth, the dragoon went into convulsions, clawing at the floor with his free hand, kicking spasmodically. His sunglasses had fallen off, and Brigid, with cold satisfaction, recognized him as Lieutenant Galt. She turned away from his death throes, retrieving his autoblaster and ignoring the distant, accusing voice of her conscience. Kane, muscles quivering with the strain, pulled his body up to chin level with the raised lip of the catwalk. He counted six dragoons, directing their fire to the floor below. Propping the Sin Eater's barrel on the edge, he fired a long burst, the storm of bullets striking splashes of scarlet from the nearest dragoon's uniform trousers, stitching a red-rimmed line from calf to hip. The multiple impacts smashed him sideways against his comrades, starting a domino effect. Two of them fell, but they all staggered. The firing pin of Kane's blaster clicked dry on an empty magazine. Blaster barrels turned in his direction. From the floor, Brigid set up a left-to-right pattern of fire, knocking three of them sprawling at awkward angles, their blood dripping through the openings in the floor grill. Kane scrambled and pulled his way to the metal walkway. He kept his eyes on one of the fallen dragoons as he struggled over the railing. The wounded man caught sight of him and raised his subgun. A hand tangled in the thick hair at the back of Kane's head and jerked him backward with neck-wrenching force. Kane relaxed his body, allowing it to go in the direction it was pulled. He used his legs as catapults, his head as a battering ram. Moving with serpentine reflexes, Strongbow evaded his attempt at a body slam. He released his grip on Kane's hair and sidestepped. Kane hit the floor grill with his right shoulder and skidded toward the edge of the platform. He looked up just as the toe of Strongbow's boot slammed solidly into the pit of his stomach. Cramping knives of pain stabbed through him, and a second kick rolled him to the very edge of the platform. Kane tried to use the empty Sin Eater as a club, but Strongbow was quicker. He brought his foot down in a hard stomp, trapping his wrist at the narrow lip of the platform. Numbness shot up his arm to his elbow. Strongbow ground his heel into his wrist, the expression on his face one of venomous, delighted malevolence. Desperately, Kane flung up his right leg, pounding the knee into the back of Strongbow's thigh, directly into a nerve cluster. His leg buckled, and he fell directly on top of Kane. Strongbow's teeth gleamed in a snarl. Steely fingers sank into Kane's throat muscles, while his free hand battered Kane about the head and face. The man was immensely strong. The sour, musty stench of his exertions clogged Kane's nostrils. Kane wrapped his legs in a scissors lock around the gaunt body, seeking to squeeze the air, the consciousness, the life out of it. His right hand lost all feeling. The wrist bone had been shattered a few months before. Strongbow continued to strike with a knotted fist. Kane tasted the salt of his own blood filling his mouth. He raked his nails over Kane's face, trying to blind him, but he managed to jerk his head aside. Flesh tore in four vertical scarlet lines from temple to jaw. Strongbow's hand tightened around his throat, cutting off his ability to breathe, to think. The man's face tilted crazily above him, swimming off into a blurry fog at the edges. Kane reached up with his left hand, fingers hooked, and punched them into Strongbow's face. An eyeball tore loose in a pulpy spurt of golden membrane and dark, hot blood. Strongbow's fingers loosened around his throat. The pressure of Strongbow's foot lessened on his wrist. His vision cleared a little, and he snatched his arm free and brought it up in a clumsy sweep. The heavy metal frame of the Sin Eater smashed against the side of Strongbow's head. Bone crunched, and the man's jaw suddenly hung loose. He flailed back with an insane explosion of strength, fueled by pain, breaking Kane's weakened scissors lock around his body. He struggled half erect, and Kane lashed out with both feet. Strongbow reeled backward, catching himself on the instrument panel, levering himself to his full height. The two dragoons still standing on the catwalk looked over at him instinctively, at the raw, gelid horror oozing out of his eye socket. Only Lord Strongbow's iron voice and sacred dragon authority could restore order in this chaos. Even as they turned to him for guidance, a flying shaft of wood and metal flashed and sank deep into his chest. His scaled features twisted, convulsed, and spasmed. He went lead gray to the lips. He didn't move, didn't try to touch or pull out the spear buried in his body. Assaulted by squalls of agony and nausea, Kane dragged himself to his elbows and looked down over the end of the platform. He saw what he'd expected to see. Mother Fan stood on the other side of the pulsing rift of the black bubble. Though her form was partially distorted by the rippling bands of energy, he saw the savage, feral joy shining in her eyes. She seemed to transmit that savage surge of energy to Kane. The pain in him gave a great surge, then ebbed away. His body was at once warm and cool, tingling with new strength, new resolve. Weariness was gone. He felt like a machine running without thought or sensation until it burned out. He was only dimly aware of rising, rushing to his feet and securing a cross-wrist grip on the spear shaft. On his Yebolg, he lifted it up. Strongbow gurgled as his arms tried to hug Kane close.
A short life to you, a wet mouth, and a death in Ireland, you unholy son of a bitch.
He heaved up on the spear, hoisting the strangely lightweight Strongbow off his feet, swiveling from the hips as he swung him up and over the railing. Kane dipped the spear down at a 45-degree angle. Strongbow slid along it, leaving a long, wet, carmined trail in his wake. He dropped from the bronze spearhead and fell with a lazy somersault into the center of the black armaglass bubble. Kane thought he saw Mother Fan's hands spread wide to receive him. Hanging half over the rail, the blood-dripping spear gripped tightly in his right fist. He saw a flash of light in the black bubble. Then the gleaming pyramid shape of the interphaser arced through it. The narrow tip of the spiraling energy funnel was still connected to the apex. The surface of the bubble boiled as if it were covered by a layer of molten lava. Lines of energy skipped over it. Tumescence rose up like miniature volcanic eruptions. The bubble changed color from black to blue to red to yellow. Then it expanded into a ball of white-hot fire. For a microsecond, between one eye blink and another, Fand appeared in its boiling, throbbing center, looking as she had when he first had seen her, made of shining star stuff, glowing, beautiful, and loving him. Her voice slid into his mind, a tender caress.
Time's a river. I am overjoyed your spirit lives still, Kain. There is still living.
And she was gone, lost among the black gulfs of infinity. He had only a glimpse of the bubble swelling savagely to a sun before breaking into a million sparkling fragments. The platform sagged, and Kane felt a giant's hand snatch him, wrenching him over the rail. He braced his legs and fought the powerful, incessant suction. Mouths wide in silent screams, the dragoons flipped over the top rail. He saw bodies, limbs flopping like disjointed puppets, swirling around the column in crazed orbits, caught up in the swirling implosion. The platform under his feet shuddered and lurched. He toppled from it. Yebolg in his hand, he plummeted toward the vortex. Cuculain diving to his doom with a cry of defiance on his lips. He would live forever in the other world with his beautiful Danann princess. His plunge stopped short with a snap that sent a streak of pain up his arm and into his shoulder socket. Bridget gripped his left wrist with both hands, bent almost double over the platform's waist-high railing. Her hair floated and billowed around her face. Eyes slitted, she clung to him, anchoring him in place. Her lips worked, mouthing words, but Kane couldn't hear her over the sucking, whistling roar in his head. Finally, he understood that she was directing him to drop the spear and grab her wrists with his right hand. He looked from the sea-green color of her eyes to the incandescent furnace spinning below him, then to the spear in his fist. It wasn't Gebold. It wasn't an enchanted weapon. It was just a primitive thing of blood-drenched wood and forged metal, and it didn't even belong to him. Opening his hand, he watched it spiral down into the maelstrom of coruscating energy. Then, the vortex sealed itself, and the invisible fingers tugging at him withdrew. Reaching up, he grasped Bridget's wrists. She backed up, heaving on him, until he was able to get a grip on a cross brace and pull himself up to the tilting platform. They stood, shaking with exertion and weakness, panting into each other's sweat-slick faces. No strength remained in either one of them. Slowly, they turned their heads and surveyed the carnage in the cavernous hollow ellipse. The figures of Domi and Grant rose from behind the main bank, shambling through the scattered litter of electronic parts, circuit boards, and other less identifiable odds and ends. They moved slowly, stiffly, as if they were in a state of shock. Where the orb had hung suspended, only empty space commemorated its existence. But the interphaser still gleamed on the floor where it had been thrown from Newgrange, keyboard and power pack apparently still intact.
I guess my theory worked. Throwing the interphaser through the conduit caused a polarity reversal. I hope it didn't harm Fand.
It didn't.
He didn't elaborate on how he knew, nor did she ask. Grant and Domi gazed silently up at them, then at the little Pyramidian.
The latest in a long line of one percenters, by God.
Nobody laughed. Kane leaned his hip against a fire-blackened console and smoked the last of Grant's cigars. He had given it up willingly, saying something about having enough of fire and smoke to last him for a while. Bridget sat cross-legged on the floor and examined the interphaser. For the past 20 minutes, she had been inspecting its internal circuitry, micro, and sub-processors. Grant had checked the set of locked vanadium alloy double doors and reported they were impossible to open without a sonic key. Kane was sure only one existed, and it had vanished along with the rest of Strongbow. So far, they had found no other means of exit from the elliptical chamber. The only possibility of escape from the giant eggshell lay within the innocuous alloy skin of the interphaser. For the time being, they were safe, and Kane was content to sit and smoke and hurt and brood. He didn't want to think about Fand or Ire or Kukulin or destinies or souls, but he did.
What does a man do when his entire life is turned into an endless hunt? A hunt for enemies, for meaning, for purpose?
His gaze shifted to Bridget as she hunched over the interphaser. He owed her his life yet again, but if his life meant nothing to him, then he owed her nothing. Suddenly she looked up, as if sensing the weight of his stare. She returned it.
I'll pay you back, Baptiste, in whatever way I can.
He realized he had spoken nonsense, a non sequitur, blurting out his private thoughts, and she would have no idea what he was talking about. To his disquiet, her mouth set in a tight line.
You don't owe me anything, Kane.
He quirked an eyebrow at her speculatively, but she returned her attention to the Pyramidian, closing up the side of the device. She stood up, frowning down at it. Domi and Grant looked at her questioningly.
It seems fine, but I admit I don't know why, after channeling all that energy through it.
What do you think happened on the other side?
She shook her head, red-gold tresses tumbling about her face.
I wish I knew. I can only guess. Maybe the conduit sealed with no harm to anyone. Maybe a quantum shift occurred, sending everyone down one of the side arteries Lakesh mentioned. For all I know, it may have triggered a temporal dilation, and none of this really happened.
Grant nudged the interphaser with a foot and probed at his twinging ribcage.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? Can this thing get us home, or at least out of this damn place?
Bridget lifted her hands, palm up, in a helpless gesture.
I don't know. Possibly. I programmed it with the destination codes and coordinates of the Cerberus Gateway, but it wasn't designed to act as a MAT transunit, you know?
Hell, this piece of junk hasn't performed according to its design since the first time you turned it on.
I know. It's a mystery, and the only way to reason it out is return it to Cerberus and download its memory into the main database.
From a slit pocket in her pants, she removed a small disk.
This is it. If we use the interfacer to open a gateway, the device itself will have to remain here, but we'll have its memory.
Kane stood up, a wave of dizziness engulfing him for a moment. He waved off Bridget's steadying hand.
Well, let's get to it, then. Get the hell out of here.
There's a wide... No, make that enormous margin for error. The field may not be cohesive enough for us to complete a full transit. And we'll have to go one at a time.
At this point, I'll be glad to have a little time alone.
Reaching down, Bridget tapped the keys, and a wavering cone of light fanned up and out.
Who wants to go first?
Without a word or a backward glance, Domi moved forward and stepped into the shimmering veil. With a swiftness that deceived the senses, she was gone, whisked away as if she had never been. Taking and holding a deep breath, Grant strode deliberately forward.
For the record, I hate these fucking things.
Kane glanced toward Bridget.
Just me and you, Baptiste. Who draws the short straw?
That'll be me.
She took a long stride toward the interfacer's field.
See you on the other side.
Before she stepped into the glowing fan, Kane grabbed her by the arm and pulled her back. She resisted a moment.
Kane?
That was all she said, but it was enough. He knew part of his hunt was over. He put his arms around Bridget Baptiste and held her, inhaling the fragrance of her hair. It smelled of sweat and cordite, but he didn't mind. If nothing else, he had someone to trust.
Yeah. See you on the other side. Anamkara.
Lakesh awoke, strapped to a bench, sweating and nauseous from the drug. From beyond the steel-riveted door came the continual sound of footsteps, faint voices, the odd scream. He lay there for some time, staring at the damp ceiling, at its single light bulb, wondering how bad things would get and how soon they would begin. He didn't have long to wait before the door scraped open. Two men stepped in. Without surprise, he saw one of them was Salvo. The other was a stocky, blunt-featured mag with a moon face. Because of the poor lighting and the residual of the drug creeping through his system, he had to grope for the man's name. Finally, he recognized him as Pollard. Both of them were dressed in the pearl-gray duty uniforms of magistrates. Salvo's teeth gleamed in the gloom.
How are we feeling?
I'll only tell that to the Baron.
If only it were as simple as that. However, if you could bring yourself to cooperate, I might open certain avenues that would offer you a way out.
A way out of what?
Why, a death sentence for sedition, of course.
You've assaulted me, imprisoned me, and you dare to speak of sedition?
My powers are broad, with plenty of room for interpretation. I am going to ask you questions, some personal, others dealing with ideology.
I will not answer any questions unless they are put to me by the Baron.
You're a difficult man to sympathize with. However, you are worth more than even the Baron imagines.
Lakesh turned his face away, staring again at the ceiling, at the feebly glowing light bulb.
Why don't we make it easier for him to think it over?
Good idea. Lakesh, you know as well as I do that there's an easy way and a hard way of getting things done. Just for you, we'll dispense with the hard way.
Pollard leaned over him, inserting a key into the lock of the restraining straps. He opened them, flung them away, and hauled Lakesh to his feet by the front of his coverall. He stood there, temples throbbing, belly lurching, heart thudding.
Turn around. Face the wall.
Slowly, unsteadily, Lakesh did as he was told.
And now?
This.
Pollard kicked him effortlessly in the base of the spine. There wasn't enough room in the cell for him to fall, but he slammed face first into the wall. Blood ran in a rivulet from his nostrils over his lips.
Again. And again and again and again. Until he understands precisely how valuable he is.
Outlander's Savage Sun is a Graphic Audio production. Outlanders and all characters are trademarks owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 1997, Worldwide Library, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2006, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Thomas Penny, Richard Rowan, Colleen Delaney, David Coyne, Casey Jones, Ken Jackson, Anne Flosnick, Kate Torrey, Dolores King-Williams, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Rogers, Christian Parent, and Nathaniel Perry. Adapted for graphic audio by Casey Jones. The Outlander's theme was composed by Norman Vanderslice. Additional original music by Chris Rowan and Matt Webb. If you enjoyed Outlanders, be sure to look for James Axler's Deathlands, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another Graphic Audio title.
The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Mac Bolan works night and day to protect the United States of America. But he isn't the only one. The government has had long-standing agents in the field with vital agendas.
Okay, Stryker. What do you know about Project Zodiac?
I've heard rumors. Some sort of doomsday plan from the Cold War.
That's damn close. 12 deep cover agents scattered across Europe, each equipped with a compact nuclear device that fits into a standard-sized briefcase. Each of these has a full 1/4 kiloton yield. Very nasty stuff. Dirty as hell.
But when the unexpected happens...
The bastards got them. Zalharis and his crew stole the entire shipment of Zodiacs.
A band of Brazilian mercenaries known as the Scion hold the trigger on 4 weapons of mass destruction. And they're bringing them on American soil.
These are kamikaze models. Damage the casing, and even if it's not already armed, the bomb will detonate automatically. The Zodiacs have to be recovered intact and undamaged.
The threat is real, and the bloodthirsty mercenaries are already here. Bolan will have to scour the states to track down the heartless killers. And even at the top of his game, he can't be everywhere at once.
Did they just toss something overboard? Why on earth is that?
In the Scion's unholy sail, death goes to the highest bidder. Don't miss 1 minute of Mac Bolan 96. Stolen Arrows.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, Snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.